Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. I am excited about this one. Not much on the news front, on the NBA side, in at the very least. But on the W side, we did got some emails that were sent out since the last show. So we're going to go through those quickly and then get into some basketball talk. On the W front, players of the week, Asia Wilson, Kelsey Mitchell. Asia makes sense. Dominant performance, you know, tied the scoring record with 53 points during her week. Kelsey Mitchell, I feel like her play has gone under the radar post-All-Star break, period. Little bit of an efficiency waning early in the season. She's bounced back majorly, and then post-All-Star break, she's just kind of been on fire. And the Indiana Fever have done a really good job of blending her own ball and off-ball usage. So nice for her to get that award. The Fever were 3-1 last week. And as of today, they are still not technically eliminated from playoff contention. It will take a lot for them to get there to get into that 7 or 8 seed. But if they win and the other teams don't, they can do it. And if the Fever do make the improbable playoff run, it's going to be behind the play of Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston. So congrats to Kelsey. Congrats to Asia once again. We also got some award scheduling news, which if you care about that, you know, when the awards actually being announced, going to be through basically middle of September through early October for those awards. What stood out to me in the email that the W sent out, they announced all the dates. If you care about MVP, that's September 26th. Coach of the Year, September 17th, so on and so forth. The all-defensive rules have changed. Heading into the year, it was going to be much like the NBA does it, two guards, two forwards, and a center for two teams. So you're looking at four guards, four forwards, two centers. It's now positionless. And from WNBA Head of League Operations, Bethany Donovan, she said, after consulting with our teams, we believe this change gives us an opportunity to simply honor the 10 most deserving defensive players. When we changed the all-WNBA team voting process last year, we noted how our game has evolved in terms of pace of play and spacing. The players have expanded their skill sets, and that is equally true on defense. Steve, were you surprised that they went with the change? And more importantly, do you like the change to go positionless for all defense?
Not surprised that they went with the change. I do think it's a good move as far as being able to recognize more talents, especially with some of the wing and guard defenders we have in this league. I am a little worried if some bigs who may have gotten an opportunity get swept away a little bit to a degree. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see how it shakes out in the end. But I think it's a plus. I think just recognizing the top talent is fun. And hopefully the structure still maintains itself to where everyone's kind of getting their just due. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I'm a little surprised that they changed it like this. Like, it wouldn't surprise me of heading into next season awards, like, hey, everything's just positionless. For them to reverse course mid-year is the surprising part for me. And I think I understand the concerns about what the position changes will mean for who's getting recognized. Like, so you just said a friend of the program, Mark Schindler, had a thread about it. I get it. And I think a middle ground there would have been to follow more of the all-star format to where maybe instead of two guards, two forwards and a center, it's two backcourt and three frontcourt, or maybe two backcourt, two frontcourt and a wild card. And so you can still, you know, celebrate perimeter players without it having to be guards and getting into, okay, who's a shooting guard versus a small forward and stuff like that. And being able to highlight those bigs or those frontcourt pieces without having to pigeonhole a center. If, you know, in my opinion, the center class hasn't been super strong this year compared to last year or years prior. And I don't think the actual guard room has been super strong, especially compared to what last year was, where it felt like we had like 8 or 9 candidates for those four guard spots total. And so for years like that, I wish we had a little more of a middle ground so you can still highlight who you want to highlight without it, you know, without running the risk of, okay, we're just going to put four bigs on the first team or something like that. I do think we may run into those possibilities moving forward, depending on like just how it ebbs and flows in terms of effectiveness across the positions. I don't know how big of a deal that's going to be ultimately, because I think just the top 10 players should be highlighted. but I also get not wanting to completely lose like the difference in defensive roles and wanting to highlight smaller players, since if you're looking at an impact perspective, like interior players are going to impact defense a little bit more. Pain points are the most fruitful in the W, and if you can deter those or get block shots or in possessions with defensive rebounds, like that stuff is just inherently more valuable than like traditional point of attack defense, even if you zoom out in the team scheme, and like that's still very important for you to work. So I guess I'm just, I want to see how it ebbs and flows moving forward.
Well, the pressure is going to be on. Everybody wanted positionless things. You got it. Now you got to make the right move. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see what happens. If this is a safe space, honestly, doing our exercise where we kind of put our votes in for what we put, I had to try and make a way to find some scenario where I could put Asia, Stewie, and AT on the all defense first team. That might just be the bit.
You think they recognize that? Like, oh, wait, one of these gonna fall to the second team, huh? We can't have that.
I said it out loud, so.
From respectfully messy to just messy. No, but in all seriousness, I get it. Because, again, it's been such a weird year with, like, Asia shifting back fully to the four, playing alongside Candace and Kia. And Alyssa Thomas, again, being a four, but then having to, I guess, start at the five with Breonna Jones going back. But Connecticut still has DeWanna Bonner defend fives, and AT roams around, so she's still, like, a four in practice. But any kind of blurring of the line, I could see how that may be confusing to voters. So I guess if that's the impetus of it, then I get it. It would also be a little bit funny if that's what it was, because ultimately you could have just said, well, voters, make your choice, like, do your best. But yeah, those have been, I think they've been three of the top five defenders, so it would have been weird to see one on the second team. But you know, I guess we're going to see. Good luck to the voters out there. we do our exercises. We don't have official votes. For y'all, though, we wish you the best. Do what you got to do. to the FIBA World Cup. We did get a Team USA victory once again, beating Jordan, headlined by Rondé Hollis, Jefferson Bryant, I guess. I don't know what the bid is these days. But anyway, a 110-62 victory. Go ahead.
No,
I'm not. I know how you feel.
But, man, we didn't have to do all that. We did not have to take that and run with it and make Rondé's journey solely Kobe. I'll leave it there.
I just tossed you the lob. I wanted you to get your, because you're right. It went from this is funny, this is cool, to literally everything he does is a, Anyway, Team USA with a 110-62 victory. The biggest storyline from that game, aside from just the deficit, was Brandon Ingram sliding to the second unit. Josh Hart starting into the starting lineup. And that coincided with Team USA's best first quarter of the tournament. Anthony Edwards with 13 points. Josh Hart flying around, grabbing boards, pushing the pace. Again, the opponent certainly factors into how well USA played in that regard. But it was interesting. We just had a whole conversation about the Brandon Ingram thing on the last pod. Still came as a surprise to me that they made the starting unit change. Though I guess if you were going to do it, it makes sense to go ahead and test it out as you've already clinched a spot into the next round to play that Group J round of games. So how did you feel about the experiment? Do you think this is something that Team USA is going to keep moving forward?
I'd imagine they keep doing it. I was a little surprised that they went with it, especially because I saw the vision of what they were trying to do with the first unit and what they were trying to do with the second unit. So accountability is important. I thought ultimately they could get where they wanted to go, but I think this move benefits everyone. And I think it's just finding a way to have two complementary units that can get to the Team USA concepts on both ends of the floor in different ways and force you to have to deal with them all night. And so one of the things I said in the buildup was like, if you like the second unit for Team USA, right? Everyone liked Halliburton's pace and the way that Reeves played and the speed, the switching. Think about how much stronger this team looks if that first unit can hit the right notes. And you go back to that USA Jordan game, it's 20-4 Team USA when the first subs come in. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple things and a couple ways that this works before we just go purely Brandon Ingram, because I'm sure we'll talk about that. It's one of those scenarios. I don't know if you ever had like a scenario on a team or like living with anyone or your friends where it's just uncomfortable and everyone finally says the thing and you find out everyone was thinking the same thing. Just nobody wanted to say it.
Mm-hmm.
First, I think that's kind of where we arrived. I think that's kind of what Brandon Ingram spoke to, where he was like, hey, coaches said you might be a better fit with these two as opposed to these two. And I agreed. And it's like, well, what do we need to argue about? In theory, there's a couple big reasons. Jalen Brunson has more room to attack. Anthony Edwards no longer has to wait to go ahead and say, I got it. It's just, I got it. Bridges has been steady this whole run because, as we mentioned on the last podcast, this is a role that he has played before. He knows exactly what to do in these scenarios. I can find the gaps. I can make shots. I can attack closeouts. I can play defense. We're good. And then you add Josh Hart, who is a great team guy, naturally will keep the ball moving, can attack in transition, gives you the defense. So you have two connectors. You have Jaren. You have more room for your two guards. It just fits a little bit better at the start of the game. I think the biggest thing that I hadn't considered or thought of was what it did for the defense. You can up that defense a little bit with that first unit. And if they can get stops, now they can get out and run. Now that takes a lot of pressure off that first unit half court offense because you got a little bit of wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
And I going back to that game, look at the defensive pressure that Team USA had to start that game. You now have to deal with Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart and their activity and Jaren Jackson in the paint. Anthony Edwards will crank it up ball pressure wise more than people think, especially if he has a matchup. We always joke he gets a plus 10 overall attribute boost when he has a matchup that he wants to guard.
Mm-hmm.
They just look different. Like a made basket, now Josh Hart is shadowing the inbounds. You got full court pressures from Bridges. They just cranked the heat up, which really helped them out. The switches between 2 through 4 look different. And then offensively, back to the original point, sometimes it's about finding a way to let guys play without thinking. And the way that Jalen Brunson established himself to start that game, I thought was important. Not just from a statistical view, just the mindset that he had. I know everyone's going to make fun because I said mindset again. I did the thing. They ran the first play for Jaren Jackson Jr., post up. Next time down, Jalen Brunson calls to run it again. He's taking ownership, ready to go. Okay. But I think there's like a few transition trips, and now he's bringing it up with pace. Now he's backing down. Looks like it's going to be a post up. Nope. It's an empty side pick and roll with Jaren Jackson Jr. No hesitation, no overthinking. That's important. And here's the part that I found extremely funny. Because I had a couple thoughts that I threw up on the expert app, I guess. And, you know, the responses, of course, delve into a Brandon Ingram, Jalen Brunson, da-da-da conversation, which, by the way, stop it. Y'all need to stop. Stop comparing players the way that you do, because y'all don't retain the information to make the accurate comparison. We can get back to that. The first subs, Nikias, do you know who they were?
Who were they?
Paolo, Austin Reeves, Brandon Ingram, which meant we had Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, and Brandon Ingram in together anyways.
So just, you know, just not right now.
That's just establish guys, get them in rhythm, and it makes a difference. And I don't want to go too much further, but Brandon Ingram looked way more decisive. He looked way more comfortable. You can see it from his first or second touch. The wiggle was back. That sounds wild, but when he catches and starts shoulder through the legs, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here he comes. Now it's a driving kick to Tyrese Haliburton. It's like, oh yeah, he's fine. That's all I need to see. Mm-hmm. That was all I needed to see. What were your thoughts?
I think for me, you hit on 98% of it. And I think to your point about what the move did for the defense is something that I kind of overlooked. Because when we had the conversation, I think I framed it as we're talking about Jalen versus Tyrese. Why are we not talking about like Brandon Ingram versus Cam Johnson for the extra floor spacing, another closeout attacker, et cetera? And with Josh Hart, obviously he doesn't give you the brand of shooting that Cam Johnson does, but the defense and what that allows Team USA to unlock, especially before teams cross half court and forcing teams to bleed clock or forcing teams to kind of speed themselves up in a way that they want to. And then you get the turnovers. That clicked for me as I watched that. And as I hear you talk about it, it's like, you know what? That does make a lot of sense. And that's why Josh Hart was the guy, because something that you've talked about through this whole Team USA spiel is it's been a more conservative approach for the Team USA defense. Run a drop, want to establish this base, is more bend, don't break. It's not the Team USA that we've come accustomed to over the past decade or so, where it's we are flying around, y'all can't handle the ball pressure because our, you know, our NBA superstars now are playing with other superstars, which means they can ramp their defense up in a way that they don't in the NBA, and you just can't deal with all of this. And so it gave more elements of that, and that event creation, that pressure just made life easier for them in all facets. And naturally, if the second unit is coming in, like, I feel like they're just playing with a flow anyway because they're comfortable. But if it's coming in, like, early in, it's just like, hey, we need to, let's get this lead back or let's extend this lead. They come into Jordan games like, oh, this is, we are cooking. Let's go ahead and end this then. It takes pressure off the second unit too. And I think it was even more important for the second unit to feel a little bit loose with the change. And now you have Brandon Ingram. Now you can afford to blend in more Brandon Ingram on ball stuff. Because one of the things that you pointed out last pod was like, hey, I hope people recognize if you're trying to shift lineups, some of the stuff you didn't like from that first unit is coming to the second unit now. You can alleviate a lot of that if the lead's already 16. It's like, okay, we can kind of work through the kinks of a Brandon Ingram-centric bench unit with Tyrese still pushing pace and Cam Johnson still flying around. You know, Paolo doing what he does and Austin Reeves getting downhill and attacking. It's easier to kind of find that blend. And depending on how quickly they are able to find that blend moving forward, if they do stick with this lineup change, I think this was just the best move for everybody. Brandon Ingram talked about it. Steve Kerr's talked about it. You also saw just how much more comfortable it was. And again, like, this was a Jordan team that had not won a game yet. And so you don't want to over-index to a certain degree, but like, you could see the process feeling smooth. And if you're in a place where everyone feels more comfortable, and to your point, nobody's thinking as much as they were in the first few games, it's a more dangerous Team USA group. And I think it's important for them to establish that now as they head into these Group J games with stiffer competition. And not just stiffer competition, specific personnel that can, you know, for the first time, see them poke at some of the things that we talked about with Team USA. Like, hey, what does the switching look like against bigger front courts, et cetera. And as we get into Montenegro with Nikola Vucevic, as we get to Lithuania on Sunday with Jonas Valanciunas in particular, now we're going to see, like, what can they establish? How quickly can they jump out, if they can jump out at all? So this Jordan game felt very important.
No, I'm with you there. And I'm glad you touched on the road ahead, because Montenegro and Lithuania do present a little bit of an interesting challenge. There's more experience. There's a little bit more seasoning. There's more execution. There's more pace. There's more timing. And you have to circle back to those games where Team USA had to get in the mud against Germany, had to get in the mud against Spain. And those were two teams that, hey, we have a level of talent, but we also have a belief in what we do. So we're not necessarily going to bend to this pressure. We're going to keep running our stuff. So now we talk about the activity and ramping it up. This is one of those games where you have to sustain if you're Team USA. One of those types of games where you can't just defend for 18, 20 seconds. You're going to have to finish possessions. Vucevic and JV can challenge Team USA on the interior. The willingness for these teams to post them up is one thing. Pick and roll is another for me, because you have to deal with the roll and the pop. And if those guys are in rhythm, you're going to have to figure that out. The guards on both of those teams will explore the space if you're in a drop. So it's not necessarily going to be one dribble pull up, but no, we're going to hold this pressure on your defense and make you make a decision, which has been something that Team USA, when it's got poked at a couple times, where Jaren's in that deep drop and, oh, do I commit? Do I recover? Oh no, we've given up something. And those type of things add up. Paolo's been the backup five darn near, and that unit's gone to more switching. Can you afford to do that against this level of size? Does that impact your defensive pressure? Because that's the one thing, like, ultimately, that type of half-court offense has a shelf life. But if this is a game where we're in the mud together and you can't speed me up and I know I can get to what I want to get to when I want to get to it, mm-hmm. it can just kind of wear on you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Can Jaren stay out of foul trouble? Like, how much Bobby Portis do we see? So the pace, the tempo, it's going to pick up. So I'm glad Team USA made this move. I think they're better off for it. And now they got to answer the bell.
They do indeed. And like the Paolo point is an interesting one because I go through the exhibition games and it's him switching, but it's also him in a drop. And it's like, this is why Paolo doesn't play a bunch of five. And as we get to the exhibition games, like, huh, look at Paolo in the drop. This looks better. These are some really good defensive possessions. And now you got a couple of beefy front courts coming up. It's like, hey, man, because with Montenegro, it's Vuč. It's also Marko Simonovic. With Lithuania, you ain't have JV. Like, they also have Donatas Motiejūnas, which makes me smile seeing that name again.
You're a Motiejūnas guy?
I was a Motiejūnas guy. I had a lot of fun watching Motiejūnas in Houston. And then he left, and I thought it was still going to be good. And then it, you know. But anyway. but no, like, it's not like it's just, okay, we have the one big, and if we deal with them, they go to the bench, and then, okay, we're fine. We just kind of do. Like, both of these teams have the ability to just kind of punish you inside and play inside out. And so I am curious to see if Team USA is up to the challenge, just what that second unit is going to look like. Because when they get stops, we know what it looks like in transition. We see Tyrese just flying around. We see Cam Johnson flying around. We see Austin Reeves flying around. We see everyone getting easier looks. And then they're able to set. If they start getting poked at and that becomes more of a half-court affair, I think this is also like another factor of moving Brandon Ingram to the second unit. Like, this also gives them a little bit of a buffer to give them a more pure shot creator with that second unit if it does happen to slow down. But ultimately, they don't want to be in that position. They want to continue to fly around and extend these leads the way they have been throughout the exhibition schedule and also these regular games. So I'm excited to watch these basketball games. Not necessarily excited about the times in which these basketball games will be coming on, but I am excited.
What you mean? The FIBA World Cup is a perfect companion for my anxieties. Oh. Whenever my brain says, hey, sleep, not so much. Hey, there's a game on.
Well, I guess when you put it that way, it's convenient in that regard. However, that Montenegro game is going to be early. And then the Lithuania game isn't that bad. I think it's what, 8:40 Eastern. But like, also, mm-hmm. I'm going to be getting ready to like drive down for church and stuff because I live like 40 minutes away. We have sound check before service, whatever. I'm not going to get a whole spiel. But like, I'm like, dang, I'm going to be on the road as this game's happening. So that kind of stinks. Inconvenient for me, you know, which is all that matters, of course. The entire schedule should be based around my needs. But yeah, should be interesting challenges for Team USA.
Well, I was going to say, a salute to Nikias Duncan. Oh. Keys.
I'll allow it in this very specific instance, but no.
Also, before you go on, because I know there's some other teams you want to mention, let me tell you how much joy I had watching FIBA Vucevic against FIBA Jonas Valanciunas in a steel cage match where I felt like they was just hitting each other over and over and over again. But continue.
Oh, no, I just had one apology to make because I meant to shout him and the team out on the last pod, and I just flat out forgot. My apologies to Australia. One, welcome back to the starting lineup, Josh Green. Glad to see him playing well. Also, Josh Giddey has been hooping this entire tournament, and I am very ready to be reckless about the OKC Thunder heading into the year.
What you mean, ready?
Yes.
This has been literally, what, a year and a half buildup? Man, if the Thunder and the Hornets are ever good at the same time, I'm going to get a free pod day.
Steve's going to do the intro and I just handle the next hour 10. And another thing.
And here's Nikias Duncan talking about the Hornets and Thunder. Have a great evening.
Have a great evening. It's insane. It's going to be like one of the low opening segments. Instead, it's just the podcast. Oh, goodness. But no, in all serious, like, one of the big areas of growth for Josh Giddey last year was his ability to get downhill. Just a level of comfort getting downhill. More shots at the rim, but more comfort with the floater. A better job of dealing with contact, actually seeking out contact on some of the drives. And to see that extend into international play, like these are just deeper paint touches for him. In addition to the passing, jumper looks a little bit smoother. You know, we'll see how that translates as the NBA season happens in a couple months. But he just looks ready for a league. And Thunder fans should be excited about that. Just, again, quick apology to Australia. I meant to shout him out.
Nah, Australia's been playing well, and I think the Giddy point is strong. What I like about Giddy is he's showing aggression while also staying composed, if that makes sense. The speed that he goes with, and I'm not going to tap the he plays with his own pace button quite yet because I need to save that for the regular season. Mm-hmm. But he's coming off in control of the scenario and taking the space, willing to take the space, no hesitation. I can get to my floater. I can read the defense. I can see what's happening. Mm-hmm. I guess my only question now becomes, how do we counter what Josh Giddey is building towards with the shift that could come for OKC? And I only say that because, in theory, OKC should be better, right? Mm-hmm. If they are better, the context will change. And some of the question marks may now become louder because they'll need him to do those things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I got you. If we're good and now teams are leaving you open and the shots aren't there, does that change what we think? If now teams are like, oh, y'all are good, we need to attack Josh Giddey in the fourth quarter over and over again, does that change things? That's just where my brain went. So separate conversation from the World Cup because he's hooping. But in my mind, I was like, where do I put him in them? Mm-hmm. Any thoughts or am I bugging?
No. I get where you're coming from for sure. And that's where, again, some of the growth that we saw from him last year becomes even more important, to where you saw him more serviceable as a defender in particular. And him getting stronger, like you saw it on the drives and that comfort getting downhill, but you also saw it defensively when teams tried to attack him. Not that he was a perfect defender, but he seemed to deal with that pretty well relative to what his rookie season was. And so if you're expecting continued growth in that regard for him, and if you're to take anything from the FIBA play so far, that growth is here, then the concerns are valid, but I also feel more confident in him overcoming those. And if he overcomes those, we already know what Shea can do. And we know what Jalen Williams brings to the table. And now you're adding Chet into the fold and what that can unlock on both ends. You know, we'll have deeper Thunder thoughts as we get into season preview content, but I'm just feeling better about Josh Giddey, period. And if that proves to be true, like, this is going to be a very good basketball team. Also, while we're, you know, Australia adjacent, obviously Team USA, they're taking on Montenegro very early Friday morning on, you know, in the U.S. anyway, very early. 8:10 Eastern, Slovenia, Australia. We got Luka, we got Josh Giddey. If I am up, I will be seated. That's just, hey, I am very excited for that matchup. That should be a good one. Because naturally, Luka's also been hooping. That's what he does. But that is just big playmaker heaven for me. I am very excited for that one. I'm going to be tuning in. Any other FIBA play thoughts, shout outs, question marks for teams moving forward?
As of right now, well, I think I'm okay. Canada. I don't have any more Canada thoughts.
They're just
it's been a fun tournament. So I kind of want to see how it progresses once some of these teams start to have to face each other.
I'm with you. I don't have anything major to add either. I had to, again, make the apology to Australia for the last pod. On the W side, here come the Washington Mystics. Finally healthy, recording on a Thursday morning. They are playing the Aces on Amazon Prime later tonight. Mystics have won their last two, including a win over the Aces at home. They also beat the playoff-bound Lynx, or what should be the playoff-bound Lynx. After all the injuries, all the spacing concerns, more injuries, the Mystics are in fifth. And they're not that far off from fourth, which would give them home court in the first round series. How about those Mystics? A great time to get healthy. And a great time to try to find themselves as they close the season and become a potential spoiler slash dark horse Steve, I will concede the floor to you, as I feel like you are, you have been.
No, you will not, pal. You will not pass the ball to me yet. No. We swinging it right back. We are D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards backcourt. No, you cook. Because here's the thing. Preseason, I said, hey, they're giving me 04 Pistons vibes. Hey, if they could just get right during this stretch, it ain't going to be fun to play the Mystics. And now I see Rebecca Lobo tweeting. This stole my bit, honestly. She didn't. Please don't quote that. Delete it. But yeah, imagine having such a great season and your reward is the Washington Mystics. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think of this Washington Mystics team? Because I've fallen for the pump fake. I've believed in what their formula is in the playoffs. The major problem for me was, oh, I don't know if you can win enough games to make this matter, because they may end up in the same scenario they were last year, where I really believe in y'all. Y'all are facing the one team that might make it hard to believe in y'all. So I don't know if they probably need to be like that 4 or 3 seed to really, really pop. I want to know what you have to say, because the Mystics did beat the Aces here recently. I ain't hear much. I didn't hear much from you on that day. Did USC play that day? What happened?
That was a Saturday game. USC did indeed play. But no, I was in pregame and postgame for that. And I noted, like, Becky Hammon was very, this team is tired before the game. And she considered resting them, etc. And as we were watching the game, I think we had a watch party for that one. It was like, early on, oh, no, this feels cooked. This offense can't really do much. And they don't have legs, and Washington in general just poses problems for them for how they defend. And with as important as the Aces guard play is, if you got Natasha Cloud and Ariel Atkins at the point of attack, and also Brittany Sykes, who got the Chelsea Gray matchup and did a darn good job, it's really difficult to deal with that Mystics team. The question just becomes, hey, can the Mystics score enough on the other end? They did in that game. And so I'm excited to see what this Thursday matchup looks like with the Mystics mostly fresh, and again, first clear injury report, I think, all season for them, with just Aces, no names on the injury report. Also, the Aces have not played since Monday. And so now I'm excited to see, not only is this the first time that we've seen these two teams face off, I guess, relatively healthy because Candace is out, but we're out, but the core is there. Both cores are there, and both teams are, they have a little bit of rest. And so this really feels like the knockout battle. And I'm excited to see how that one plays out. Before the Mystics, it was weird watching the defense slide the way that it did, like early post All-Star break and stuff. But even then, and we talked about it in the pod, like I don't really put too much salt into it just because of the sheer amount of bodies that they're missing. They don't have Shakira right now. You know, Ariel Atkins was missing time for a bit. Like it's just, there's so much in flux. Like, they're not playing good defense, and it's fair to recognize they're not playing good defense. I don't believe they're a bad defensive team. And as they've gotten healthier, and as they've continued to build this flow, we are seeing the elite defense again. And so now it kind of comes back to the fundamental question that I've had with this Washington team is, can they score enough? And more specifically, can they space well enough and stress defenses enough to create easy looks for their players? Because we know what kind of bucket getter EDD is when she's healthy. If EDD's performed in a phone booth, she can still do it because she's good. But that's the margin for error just shrinks to like zero for her and for the team as well. If they're able to get more creative with the spacing, and you know, frankly, if Brittany Sykes just continues to shoot like this, like that opens up some stuff, especially since Ariel Atkins is back and is shooting well after just not doing so for the first 10, 12 games of the season. If you're getting the shooting from Ariel, if you're able to move, you know, Shakira Austin around from the dunker spot, those free throw line flashes, use her as a screener, use her as an on and off ball screener. If you're able to move her around a bit, Brittany Sykes is making enough shots. You have a little bit more room to work with. And I think in that regard, though, I kind of come back to Natasha Cloud, who has been very important for their defense all year long, who I wish we had the tracking data for this, but at the very least, it feels like she is driving more than she did last year and generating more paint touches, if not shots at the rim, just getting in the paint more this season. Her rim pressure is very important. The playmaking off of the rim pressure is also very important. The shooting has to be there. And even beyond the shooting, like the decision making has to be there. And I've just been keeping the eye on what her play has been as the Mystics have kind of come together these last few games. It's felt more like, here's Brittany Sykes doing good things. Here's Ariel Atkins doing good things. Here's EDD back, and she's doing some solid things. Here's Shakira making a play. And it's felt uneven for Natasha. And so I wonder if she's able to find a level of consistency and stability offensively. Even if it isn't her shooting like 40% from three for a stretch, which would obviously be helpful. But if she could just find the right blend of I am driving deep, I am trying to get my own. I am driving deep, I am making this pass, I'm not trying to do too much. I'm turning down this early pull-up three that I could take and likely miss, and we're flowing into something else that gives us a better chance. If she's able to find that blend, then I think the Mystics offense goes from I don't know what they're doing to this is a sixth-ranked offense, which isn't great, but if it's sixth-ranked offense and a top-two defense, now we get into the preseason talk where they can just be the 0-4 Pistons, and they can just throw all these elite offenses over the top rope and then score enough late. And so that's kind of where I'm at with the Mystics. Like, I see it. I'm still planted. It's like a full-arm contest over the shot versus, like, jumping. for the 2K players, you know, I got the right analog stick up. Like, I don't know if they got the guard up badge to combat that. But, like, I got the right analog stick up. Hand is up. So I'm getting like an 8% contest. I'm not pressing triangle yet.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm at. What say you, good sir?
That's fair. Now see what happens when I insult USC. I got to get back to my season one hacks. I got to get back to my playbook.
Hey, they got that dub though. Hold on. Let's see. But anyway, go ahead.
I think the biggest thing for me, and you mentioned it, the defense is tough, and having to deal with those three guards and the activity they bring, that's going to be difficult in a playoff setting. And I think the one part about the Mystics is having to go through the injury process. What they found within that, it's probably not the cure-all offensively, but I like that the aggression has stayed from Hawkins, from Walker Kimbrough, from Hines Allen, from Lee Monk. Everyone kind of knows what they have to do, and there's value in that. The offense, I feel like the tempo in the half court is better. The ball movement is better. The issue is, how many times can you create an advantage, as you stated? And then what do you do once you get it? That's probably where I'm at with the Mystics, because there's just opportunities where, hey, Natasha Cloud or Brittany Sykes could turn the corner and finish. But if the defense isn't helping and they don't finish, that takes a hit. Those type of things where, hey, the movement's great. If we make a pass and we don't take that shot, that hurts us more than just a regular team, because they have to hit the margin so well when they do create an advantage. And it's just realizing that. And you're going to have those nights where they're going to be stuck in the mud. But there does feel like there's more of an understanding or a willingness, more cutting. Like, you just see more random play together as opposed to movement, pass, hold, stop, what that we've seen before. I think that's a positive. I think Brittany Sykes has been incredible. You mentioned the shooting for the month of August, shooting 39.6% from three on 4.8 attempts a game.
That's important.
And I think the work that she's done has been great on both ends of the floor. I think Natasha Cloud is going to have her day at some point. I don't know when it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be the shot, but the effort's there on both ends. The drives are there. I think the creation is also there. The finishing sometimes is there, sometimes it's not, but it's all going to come together at some point. And I do realize she's like 5-for-24 in the last two games, but
can only go up from here, you know?
I circle back to mindset. Hadn't stopped her. that's a plus. So for me, with the the last thing you want is a player out there thinking. Once they start thinking and doubting, then it looks real tricky. So, I mean, that's a tough spot to be in. Who is the best matchup for the Mystics in the first round?
Best matchup for the Mystics. Honestly, if they can, because they're only two games behind Dallas for four with five games to play. Both teams have played 35 games. Honestly, if it could be Washington, Atlanta, with some of the offensive woes that the Dream have had, again, they have the worst offensive, they've had the worst offensive rating in basketball post All-Star break. I actually need to check that again since they just got the Mercury absolutely out of here on Tuesday. Drove down for that game. I walk in. I got in like a little bit after the first quarter. Atlanta traffic, etc. Also raining, so it was a lot. I walk in. It's like 21-2. I'm just like, Now, what did I sign up for? What? Had a great time. I'll come back. I'll circle back to the Atlanta experience. But yeah, if it's Washington, Atlanta, I feel pretty good about that if I'm Washington. Washington, Dallas, again, because Dallas, you know, we talk about Washington spacing issues. Dallas certainly has the spacing issues, particularly in their guard room, which quick hat tip to Arike, who's just quietly shooting extremely well from three post All-Star break. Last I checked, she was at 39%. The inside the arc stuff is still a little funky, but you appreciate the pressure that she puts on defenses and the amount of attention that she sees. But like beyond Arike, very appreciative of what Crystal Dangerfield has done as a mid-range shooter. If she's at the three-point line, teams are sagging off. Veronica Burton, heady playmaker, teams are sagging off, she's on the perimeter. I think the Mystics have the blend of elite perimeter defenders and also what we do defensively and how we want to pack the paint just kind of fits and acts as a perfect counter to what Dallas' spacing issues are. Now, this could still very much just become a rock fight, and Dallas can generate a bunch of extra possessions because of the offensive rebounds and what Tierra McCown can do and what Kalani Brown can do. But that feels like another muddy matchup that, honestly, Washington should probably feel good about. Like, honestly, everyone in that 4-7 range, there's probably a level of comfort from Washington. Like, the one team, and, like, I don't think it even matters because I don't think they'll, you know, the seeding will break out that way. Like, Washington, the sparks in the sky, I guess the sparks or the sky, could get kind of interesting. Because those are two aggressive defenses against a Washington team that, again, like, the tempo's improved. They are trying to generate spacing in a real way, but you can't still sag off of players. There may be room for both of those teams to use their defensive base and ramp up the activity and force Washington into some turnovers. And both of them have, like, bona fide stars they can lean on in Kalia Copper, Neko Gumake, respectively, to where if it is a close game late, we know where we're going. And so, like, that can get tricky, but I don't think the seeding breaks out that way. So, if they get Dallas or Atlanta, like, I'll probably feel good. It's a good time for Washington to kind of to pull this together. While we're on the Sparks, ashamed we're bringing them up Thursday versus Monday. They've had a couple of losses. But, you zoom out, they still have won six of their last eight. They have the second best net rating in the league in August, plus 5.2 per 100 possessions. That is slightly ahead of the third ranked Aces at plus 4.9. They are way behind the top ranked New York Liberty with a nearly plus 18 net rating in August, which while we're here, the Liberty have just been the best team in the W post All-Star break flat out. Period.
Excuse me? What did he say?
Oh, no. The Liberty have just been the best team in the W post All-Star break. That just kind of is what it is. The record checks out. The net rating checks out. They also have the best defense. Like it's. But anyway, back to the Sparks. Sparks with the second best net rating, second best defense. Offense coming along. I am just enjoying watching this team play and come together, get healthier. Also, quick news nugget that I missed up top. Lexi Brown officially out for the season with the non-COVID illness. She's been a little bit more active on socials, thanking people for sending well wishes and also being like, hey, y'all, chill out for people that are prying and trying to get that info out of her. Stop being weird. I hope Lexi gets better. It's been a really...
I just hope it's all right. That full stop. That's where the discussion ends. I hope you are okay. That's it.
That's all that should be. But man, NECA's been really good. She's just been really good all year long. I don't want to sell it to, you know, limit it to this stretch, but NECA's been really good. The three-point shooting has dropped off for Jordan Canada as of late, but still, the level of comfort to get into her shots and her level of aggression in fourth quarters in particular has been fun to watch. The defense is still there. Welcome to the party, Azaree Stevens. It was apparent early on, a lot of this was just injuries, roster flux, etc. It took a minute for her to find her place in the offense. Because you look at the signing heading into the offseason, like, holy crap, this is a very talented big that can do a whole lot. And she's leaving Chicago because she feels like LA is a better spot for her, period. But also, this may be an opportunity for her to grow and really expand her role alongside NECA, etc. And it's been, as a rate, just space. Here's a random post touch. And it's hard for a post to find her rhythm like that. And then you factor in the guard play being, you know, outside of Jordan Canada. But like Lexi was in and out of the lineup. Laysha was in and out of the lineup. You got rookie Zaya Cook getting minutes and not getting minutes. But also she's not a natural playmaker. So that gets kind of weird. It's just been weird for Azaree to kind of find her footing. And now, last eight games, averaging 14-6. Post All-Star break, she's at 12-6, shooting nearly 38% from three. You're starting to see a little bit of everything from her. And I think that's very important moving forward for the Sparks. Because for a team that's missing some spacers due to injuries, illness, etc., if you're able to establish that inside-out rhythm for Azaree, if you're able to get her some cleaner inside looks to get her to the line or just get some easy ones to go in early, that's going to accentuate the shooting at a certain point. And ultimately, if you're able to invert the floor like that, that's going to make it easier for the guards. That's going to give NECA more room to operate on the block, and she's already drawn to anyway. That's going to lead to easier kickouts, easier closeout attacks, and you get the offense to solid, similar to Washington. We just need the offense to be, we just need them to be functional because we believe in what the defense can be. And again, this has been an elite defensive unit this month. And so this is a good time, you know, as basic as the analysis is, really good time for the Sparks to perk up this way. And it's no coincidence that this is happening as overall they are getting healthy. So I'm excited about this group.
I hear it there. And I see the vision. I'm glad you spoke about the effort from Azaree. I think it's been interesting because you see the vision of what the Sparks want to do. But then it's like, okay, how do you link everything together? Because I feel like whenever Hamby has it going, Azaree's in this place. And whenever Azaree has it going, Hamby's in this place. Mm. But when they both play well, good things usually happen for the Sparks, even though they're both contributing. And I think I'm just kind of stuck with the Sparks. Because I do think if they do eventually get in, they'll be very annoying to deal with because of the activity that they can bring defensively. The issue for me is just sustaining the defense and what happens when that goes away. And then also creating a sustaining offense. They, for lack of a creative way to do it, remind me of the Sun to a degree there. Mm. Where it's like, I see what you're trying to execute. But now if you're set, you know, it's a pin down for a high low and it's not there, what are you flowing into?
Huh, I wonder if there's a connection between the two teams.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, they both, never mind. Sunshine related names. I mean, this is Sparks team. They play hard. They play together. It's just, to me, health, depth, and shooting. Like, all their bigs are very talented, but how much do they have to create for themselves? Mm-hmm. I know Jordan Canada is having a heck of a year. Scoring, shooting the ball well. How much does this team need her to score all those baskets and create those plays and hit threes? It feels like every ATO play is for Carly Samuelson, because who else are you going to run some of these special sets for? That's no disrespect. But it reminds me of when I was in Memphis and we had Wayne Ellington. And obviously Wayne is great. Elite, elite shooter. The biggest plus was, oh my God, we can run stuff.
Yay!
Oh my God, we could slip, come off the screen, do something. And that's where I'm at with it. The shooting is where I don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so I fell down a mini rabbit hole, Nikias.
Ah, it's been a minute since we've gotten the Steve rabbit hole.
Yeah, a little rabbit hole, and I ended up doing some Scott Steiner math.
Oh God, okay.
So if you look at their last five games for the Sparks.
Okay.
You got two games of shooting 50% or better from three. You got three games of shooting 33% or worse from three.
Okay.
Overall, 35 for 91, 38% from three. Sounds pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carly Samuelson is 10 for 21 during that stretch.
Ah.
So if you take her away, they are 25 for 70 from three, which brings it down to 35.7. Still with me?
Still fine, yeah.
Okay. Jordan Canada is 11 for 22 during that stretch.
Oh, no.
So if you take her away, they're 14 for 48 from three, which is about 29.2%. So if you take the 29.2% chance and the 35.7% chance and their 45% chance of running a post-up play, but with the defense a 77% chance of playing some defense, they'll keep the ball out of the paint, you end up with this.
A 117% chance of winning. Oh, good gracious.
That is both a great bit and reputation harming, because someone's not going to know what I'm referencing and be like, that guy's an idiot.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well done, man. Well done. I didn't have that on the bingo card. I ain't gonna hold you. I was not expecting Steiner math. Oh, goodness. Wow. I don't even know how I follow that up. Go Sparks. We hope they stay healthy. And
here, I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
The Sky, where are you at with them?
Ah, yes. The other two. The other team that has now won two straight with naturally a big win over the Sparks. And they are a whopping game. What is it? A game? Half game behind the Sparks right now. Sparks are 15 and 20. The Sky are 15 and 21. So I guess half a game back of the AC. Hey, man. I find myself in a weird place with the Sky again, because now it feels like they're getting better tempo. They feel better offensively. And now I'm just kind of eyeing the defense again. Like, hey, what's going on here? Because I appreciate their aggressive base. But then sometimes they just, I don't want to disrespect them, but like it feels like they just like forget what they're trying to do. Sometimes like they open what the Sparks game out in zone and everybody
we could put some, no disrespect, we could put some quotations on that zone.
Yeah, they opened up in zone and like everybody was open. I was like, was this communicated? What are we cooking? Also, I think it just kind of stinks. No Alana Smith. That's a pretty big hit to the defense. So, like, that stinks, but it also helps explain why you might see them tapping into some other stuff defensively. Because that's a pretty big loss. What she does at the level, what she does on the back end, quick hands, smart rotations, etc. Well, that's be very good. If they can tie up defense, this is a team that pressures you and turns you over. And that allows their offense to run. Figuratively and literally. And again, like the half court tempo has felt better. At the very least, it's felt like they know what they're flowing into. Double drag here, post touch here, empty side pick and roll here, guard screening here, guard screening for into a post up here, Marina and Cobb being used together. It feels like that blend is starting to feel a little bit better. I think for me with the Sky, and it makes sense based on where they are and all the moves they had to make this offseason after everyone left, it just feels like we only get very small pockets of everything working at the same time. It's either the defense is flying around, the half-court offense is what is going on, Costavas, or the offense is finding the flow, the tempo is cool, Dana Evans has been dynamite the last few games, and the defense is just giving up corner threes and shots at three. If they can blend this together, and we've seen, again, more elements of this over the last two games, if they can blend both sides of the ball together and put together a full 40 minutes, give us a 32-minute game. Not even a full 40 yet. Give us 32 strong minutes on both ends. This is a Sky team I wouldn't want to see if I'm the Aces or the Liberty. I think both of those teams would beat them in a series still, so I'm not going to go that far. But defensive aggression, ball pressure, just general activity, and multiple options offensively. For teams that at different points of the year, the Aces more recently, Liberty at the beginning of the year, they have struggled with dealing with multiple options offensively. You can at least see the outline of how Chicago can make it tough for either one of them in the series. But they got to put it together enough to actually get into the top eight. So two straight wins. We'll see. But yeah, like it's been an interesting stretch run for Chicago, to say the least. Any other team slash player shout outs you want to get to while we're here?
I think I'm good. I think that the Sky are an interesting place because you can see the pieces of what they want to do. And when Kyle has it going, and Reina has it going, and Courtney Williams adds the self-creation, it puts pressure on you as far as, hey, we can get these. For me, it's just the flow and using your pieces together to where it doesn't feel like your turn, my turn with movement to a degree. So I'm intrigued to track that. Do you believe in the Fever playoff push? That was my final question.
I want to, but... They're 4 games back at the Sparks with 5 to go. Like, it's just a math game at this point. And I don't think either one of them are going to fall off to that degree to where they sneak in at 8. It's encouraging that they're closing the season like this, though. Aaliyah's just good, man. We've talked about the post game this year, but like, she's stretching it out a little bit more middies. I can't wait for like 3 years from now when we get the true like Aaliyah's taking 4 threes a game explosion. I don't think she's ever going to be like super high volume because you want her inside the arc. But I'm ready for that 3.5 to 4 attempt season for her because I know she can shoot. And with everything else she does. But like it just feels like they're mixing in more perimeter stuff with her. Like naturally the handoffs and stuff. But just exploring the jumper a little bit more, exploring that space. You're seeing the passing unlock a little bit more. It's been fun watching that. And again, Kelsey Mitchell, just one player of the week. Her on and off ball usage has been fun. Boogieing in those empty side pick and rolls, flying off of staggers, getting shots up. It's fun right now. It's not going to amount to a playoff spot, I don't think. Again, the Sparks and the Sky would have to collapse. But kudos to the Fever. They should be excited about what's happening, you know, heading into next season. Going to have a whole lot of cap space, and there are a lot of big-name free agents. Now, who's to say if they land one of those? But in general, they can build this out pretty quickly. And they have one heck of a draw in Aaliyah Boston, to say the least. And if they do miss out, like, they're still going to have, I think, the highest lottery odds because it's a 2-year stretch that the W looks at. And so they still may very well be in position to draft insert elite prospect here. We don't know who's going to declare yet. Like if Caitlin declares and you close the season out on this momentum and Indy still gets the draft, they get to draft Caitlin Clark, for example, you add her to the guard room like that. Things can turn very quickly for this Fever team. So I'll give them the props. I don't know if I see the playoffs though. Oh, also very quickly on the Arike note, I was just looking. She's shooting 38% from 3 on nearly 8 attempts in August. Again, the shooting has perked up. Inside the arc, not so much, but did want to give her the shout. Just a very quick shout out to Naz Hillman, who has stepped in, gotten more playing time since Nia Coffey's been out. Finding more pockets to be aggressive, so that's been fun. Oh, that's what I wanted to do, circle back to the Atlanta game. So I went to the game, they blew the Mercury out. Was also just cool getting to see, like I saw Brittany Griner during the All-Star game when I was in Vegas. But like getting to see a regular season Brittany Griner game for the first time in person was cool. Also seeing Diana Taurasi in person for the first time was pretty cool. Watching Diana Taurasi work a ref in real time, I did not expect to laugh as much as I did. That was cool. Also, it was HBCU night. And so just the general atmosphere, everyone kind of repping their college gear and stuff like that, that was just really cool. Steve, they had a band perform at halftime, which, one, tremendous job. Do you know what they played towards the end of their set?
Swag Surf?
Swag Surf.
All right, so the million-dollar question for the dunkers. Were you moving and grooving? Did you grab your surfboard and catch a wave?
I'm going to be honest. This is probably the first time I thought about it. Because they were killing. I did not do it, so I'm sorry to disappoint. I was like, hey, man, you got the dancers in front. You got the drummers and stuff. They rocking while they're doing it. Entire crowd is just rocking. There's just nothing like a dream game. If you haven't been to a dream home game, like, you should just go. Especially if you're in Atlanta, you have no excuse not to go. But no, you should go to a dream game at least once. Like, it's fun, whether the team is good or not. Go, they fun. Also got to witness an in arena proposal. Hashtag she said yes. Very well done. It was like a timeout break. They did like a free throw game where one of the participants was blindfolded. They had to make three shots. They made two. Buzzer sounds. Lady misses the shot. And it's like, you know, the host was like, oh, you missed, you know, not a big deal. Can you remove your blindfold real quick? She removes the blindfold. The woman's girlfriend is on one knee. It was all very wholesome. I was like, oh, that's how you do it. That's cool. That's very cool. So very fun in Atlanta. Still here. Going to grab some food before I leave. A couple of spots that I hit. Not those kind of spots. But there are a couple of food spots that I hit. In time of Atlanta. Going to get some Slim and Husky's Peaks at some point. I'll get some Busy Bees Cafe. This is for free promo for y'all. Very good food.
Anyway, we'll talk about the wings off here. Anyways, Dallas wings. They got a game.
No, you didn't. Okay. I want to close this out with some mailbag questions before we get out of here.
Let's do it.
Thank you to those who sent in your mailbag questions. Again, keep sending them in if you have NBA or W or, I guess at this point, FIBA World Cup questions. Email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to him. First question was a funny one that I calculated from a while ago from Daniel, who asked, Kayla Thornton or Josh Hart? That's it. That's the question.
Love what KT has done for the Liberty. It's Josh Hart for me.
I think the answer for me is just yes. Because it's very much I am just going to come in like a wrecking ball and do stuff. And that is very much Kayla Thornton to a T with her perimeter defense, the rebounding, the random cutting, connective in the half court with her passing, not an elite passer, but keeps it moving. And we know what Josh Hart does as well. My answer is yes. That's just what they do. They have been important parts to their teams. Josh Hart with Team USA, and we also saw it during the Knicks stretch once he was traded there. And for Kayla Thornton, she's been a very important piece to this Liberty team. Like, I still think she is their, like, sixth player rep, if there is one in the award. Like, I wouldn't have her winning it. But she's been a really important connective piece to their lineups. Next one going to come from Lan. First off, I would like to say thank you for the WNBA coverage. I started following last season, choosing to support the Aces. I am a Spurs fan. They have Becky Hammon and the Liberty. I saw a Marine Johannes highlight on the Bird app, which I love that that's how I was like, oh, I saw her pass. That's it. Listening to this podcast and looking at this season's rosters, I am feeling pretty good about those decisions. I'm going to stop right here because it has been explained why you root for the teams that you do. And both of those explanations make sense. There is no way that is going to go over well, generally.
What you mean?
An Aces and a Liberty fan.
Yeah.
What do you do for MVP talk?
Have fun.
You just kind of flow between, hey, you doing too much about Stewie. Don't forget she can do this. Like, hey, y'all doing too much against Asia. Don't forget she can do this.
Yeah, you're just everywhere.
You just, that's fine. That's fire. Anyway, listen, but back to the NBA and the schedule reveal. I have some free throw adjacent questions I would love to throw at you guys. Number one, Steve, the Heat and the Sixers first play each other on Christmas. This game will feature A, James Harden, B, Damian Lillard, C, neither, or D, both.
Ooh. I'm honestly leaning towards C, but I'll probably go B.
Okay.
B or D makes sense. What you got?
I think the answer is, because I'm between B and D, honestly. Because, man, Daryl Morey will just do it. And I do think the Heat and Blazers will ultimately come to something. I'm going to say D.
Okay.
I'm going to say D. Because Christmas is going to be not too far after, like, the December 15th date where a bunch of contracts are tradable, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is going to extend out. It should not, to be clear. I kind of got to get on your horse, get some offers, et cetera. But I think this is going to be a situation where it extends. Number two, repeat question one before the March 18th game. So post trade deadline.
B.
Yeah. I go to B on that one as well. I think he's gone by the deadline. Number three, the Spurs play the Blazers during rivalry week this year. While we know what they're doing, which is in reference to, you know, Scoot Henderson versus Victor Wembanyama, et cetera, I still have to ask, do you have an iconic Spurs-Blazers game you remember? Is there another answer other than the Memorial Day miracle?
Okay, first off, I feel personally attacked by this question. Why on earth would you ever bring up the Memorial Day miracle to me in particular? I don't appreciate that. I still remember where I was sitting. I had a plate. I was eating ribs thinking, oh, we about to do it. And you know what happened? We did not do it because Sean Elliott decided he wanted to have the best footwork ever in his life and hit that shot. And I ain't never forgave him since. Not a single bit. Not a single moment. Oh, best of luck to you. But no. Gambling for the steal. I'm still hurt to this day. Oh my God. I just pulled it back up on you, man.
Oh no, you're twisting your own knife. I don't know if you can.
I don't know. Doing it for the purposes of content.
Okay.
Secondly, I would ask to go back in the archives, the Blazers and the Spurs in the early 90s, which I know I'm dating myself. They had some fun playoff series. It's pretty classic matchups. So whenever NBA Plus comes out, I would advise you to check it out. But that's the answer.
NBA Plus. Thank you for taking the reins. Because like I kind of took the question as like, has there been like an iconic Blazers Spurs game since that game? And so I was looking like 99 onward. And so I was looking through some of the regular season game logs to see if anything like popped for me. It's like, there have been some close ones, but like nothing like classic.
Pain.
So I was like, all right, cool. Let me go through the playoff game log. Surely there's been some good big games there. Steve, since the Memorial Day miracle, literally every single playoff game that has been had between those two teams has been a double-digit victory, with all but one of those going to the Spurs. I was like, well, this doesn't count. Okay. So thank you for giving the answer, because I just did not have one. You know, with all due respect. Next one from Anthony.
1999 playoffs, lost game 1-4, lost that game on that shot, got swept. I'm still hurt. Yeah. Age 12 and age 13 me was in pain, because then we just did the whole Laker thing. I don't want to talk about it. What's the next question?
All right. So, hey, folks, from Anthony, love the content. I especially appreciate the knowledge of the game as well as the ability to articulate that knowledge, which you both have. Question, if you could undo any one move, trade, free agency, signing, etc., in NBA or WNBA history, what would it be? Similarly, if there is any one move that you wish would have happened, what is it?
I got chaos on my mind.
Okay.
I wonder what the NBA landscape would look like if Boston and Brooklyn didn't make that trade. Like, I wonder how it ends or begins for either side. I'd be intrigued there. If there's any move I wish would have happened, I wish a certain team had drafted a certain player so I wouldn't have had to hear about it for most of my childhood.
Ah, was this a center being selected over a guard that turned out to be really good?
Yeah.
You said childhood, because I was also going to go to like the center that was drafted over the wing that ended up being.
That's also, yeah. Put that on there too.
Yeah. Understandable.
Again, if you want to do trauma pod, I'm here.
I don't. Because like, here's the thing, right? Like, one, that doesn't seem very enjoyable for you. Two, I'm also thinking about like how we will brand that pod. Like if the episode title is Trauma Pod, like I feel like we're gonna have like 8 listeners, or we're gonna have our most listened to episode, which would really raise some questions about what y'all are seeking out for content. But that's neither here nor there. When I saw this question, my mind immediately went to injuries, which seems very basic to me. It's like, okay, well, you know, what if T-Mac doesn't get hurt? You know, to the Greg Oden reference, like what happens if he just stays healthy? Because he was a world destroyer in college. Like, what does that look like? Brandon Roy, I'm sorry, Steve. Like, if he would have stayed healthy, like, what does that look like? etc. Like the injury ones, I was like, okay, that's too. And so honestly, I guess this is injury adjacent. But my first one, I just kind of put the heat hat back on. Hey man, if Chris Bosh just doesn't have like the blood clot issue, like it would have been cool to just see the rest of his career mm-hmm. and see him age with the NBA becoming more modernized and how good he was still. As far as undoing a move, honestly, can I just use like the 2016 offseason? Can that just be my answer? Like respect to everyone that got paid, but like also what were like 90% of y'all cooking?
They were cooking that we got money.
Boy, did they. Everybody was working with Monopoly money. And then by 2018, everyone was going to jail.
they did not pass go, huh?
They did. No. They shouldn't have passed. No. So I guess that one, as far as a move that I would have liked to have seen happen, honestly, and this is just the T-Mac fan coming out of me, if Tim Duncan actually goes to Orlando, I would have really have liked to see that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be talking a whole lot differently about Tracy McGrady. Mm. But alas, it's the whole plane thing. Good job, Glenn. is there anything else?
I thought you were going to sneak Chris Paul in there.
I had Chris Paul jokes, and I was like, eh. Let's leave it alone. Free throw. Better Lakers stand. Chris Paul or Russell Westbrook?
Russell Westbrook.
Okay. Cool. All right. Just wanted to thought I sprinkled that one in. I guess on the W front, a move that went, nah, I'm not going to. I have a very obvious answer on the Aces front. And you know, it's fine. It's a safe space. So like there was a year very recently in which the Aces signed a player from their front office. I just could have went without them doing that. Get an actual free agent in the building in the front court instead of sending the email. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
All right. So actually, next,
would you like to explore the space there?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I want to explore that space. That didn't make sense then, especially after what we just saw. And then it was worse. I'm just like, why are we doing this? Why?
Does Kobe to the Bulls count?
It could. That would have been interesting. I guess if I'm keeping the Heat hat on, there were like some rumblings about the Heat sniffing around the Chris Paul thing before he was traded from OKC. And Miami eventually end up trading for Kyle Lowry. And like, with all due respect to Kyle Lowry, it would have been cool to have Chris in the building, but you know. Okay, anyway, from Matt, he says, hello. I stopped the pod right as I heard Monty Morris come up. I unironically love him for his high assist to turnover ratio and his ability to run an offense. This is very much a dunker spot email. I love this. I came across him when he was at Iowa State and recall him setting either a school record or NCAA record for having the highest assist turnover ratio, and I've been a huge fan of him since. Needless to say that when his name came up on the Scal pod, I perked up. Then it got me thinking about a trend in college football or the NFL with colleges producing a handful of good players at a specific position and them being crowned wide receiver U, running back U, or what have you. I'm not doing my best to not to reach here, but with Halliburton coming from Iowa State as well and him having an incredibly high assist turnover ratio, it made me think of ISU as a contender for point guard U, but I think Villanova surpasses them solely from the trio from the Knicks. So, this ramble has turned into a question. What colleges are currently PGU through center U?
And this sounds like a question that you went to work on, so I am going to pass you the ball.
Oh, man, let me open up my notes app, buddy.
See?
I got in the weeds. I was like, you know what? Virginia low-key got some wings. They got Trey Murphy and DeAndre Hunter and a couple of... Anyway, so as I was doing this exercise, I was like, okay, Nikias, how do you want to cycle through these colleges? And so naturally, I turned to 2K. Like, okay, let's go through these rosters. Let's see what colleges are popping up the most. Let's get a position group going. Fine. And so as I got through, like, team 19, I was like, there has to be an easier way for me to do this. And so I go to spotrec.com, and would you know, they just have like an entire, like on the NBA section, they have an entire college tab in which they list how many colleges have, you know, how many active players are from each college, sorted, whatever. You can click on that college and it lists every player that currently plays for that college. I was like, you know what? We did it. Quickly realized that Kentucky was just going to run the table on a lot on a lot of this stuff. I think they had 25 active players. Duke had 22. And then the next closest was like 15. I was like, well, this is going to end up being very concentrated. But anyway, I ended up splitting the groups into threes. Kind of fit with the modern vibe of the NBA. So I guess Kentucky would technically be like combo guard U for me.
Okay.
Since they have Shea, they have Jamal Murray, they have Tyrese Maxey, they have Tyler Hero, they have Emmanuel Quickly, you got Malik Monk. If you count, I had two asterisks for players. So Devin Booker, who played point guard early in his career when the team was just garbage, but he's now more wing than guard, I feel like, in these kind of positional designations, quote unquote. So like, is Booker with an asterisk, but obviously he's very good and went to Kentucky. And then the other one was Shaedon Sharpe, who was supposed to go to Kentucky. And I think was like technically on campus, but just never played for him. So if you want to count Shaedon in that, you can. But combo guard U feels like Kentucky. Wing U for me was Villanova. So you got Mikhail, you got Josh Hart, you got Dante DiVincenzo, you have Sadiq Bey, who I forgot went to Villanova. You also have Cam Whitmore. And Big U, also Kentucky. It's just kind of hard to beat Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo and Karl Anthony Towns as a trio. There's also Julius Randle. There's also PJ Washington. Depending on where you designate Jared Vanderbilt, he also counts. I did want to also shout out Duke with Paolo and Wendell and Zion and Mason Plumlee. Mark Williams also went to Duke. Gonzaga doesn't have the volume, but Sabonis, Chet, and Kelly Olynyk is a pretty good trio as well for bigs. I loosely mentioned like the Virginia wings. Washington might just be like defense U, lowest of keys. With DeJounte and Jaden McDaniels, Batiste Thybulle, like they've got some names there.
Michigan State would like a word.
Michigan State would also like a word. Got, you know, Draymond, he's pretty cool and stuff. Connector U might be Florida State with Scotty and Terrence Mann and a couple others. As you can see, I just kind of went. It just, you know. Yeah. So I hope I did my best to answer your question. Steve, your thoughts?
I was letting you cook. You cooked. I figured you would cook. You took some of the questions I had for you because I was trying to alter the format. I was about to be his Florida State potential you.
Yeah, that could also, yeah. Yeah.
Is Washington the cook you? or is that Michigan?
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay, we will we'll close with this one from Matt as we are over an hour in, et cetera. So from Matt, he says, hello. Since my last email about WNBA stats were ridiculed by Steve, here's a more lighthearted one.
Wait a minute. Time out. Wait a minute. What you mean? What did I ridicule one of our fine dunkers' emails?
Nah, you just hit him with a general, I don't know.
Man, that ain't pretty cool, man. I ain't got no jokes for you. But if you want to, let me talk to you.
Okay, that's all right. Let me take this back over. All right, anyway. So the question is, favorite Fortnite skin duo? Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch or Giannis and LeBron? Also, Nikias and Steve, which one of you is which character?
I'm going with Bianca and Becky on this one.
Okay.
And I believe in that scenario, Nikias would be Bianca and I would be Becky.
Ah.
Are you saying I'm not the man?
God. See, here's the thing. I was torn with that one because I was like, you know what? Like, yeah, but like also, Becky has the whole lemonade thing. And I know how I am with lemonade. I was like, hey, there might be an angle here. But, eh. It's probably Bianca and Becky, though. That's got to... They did the thing. The Giannis and LeBron one was fun, though. I will give them that. So, yeah. Steve, any free throws for you?
I sure do.
Okay. I got a handful. If you have more, I can knock mine out quickly.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, knock yours out, bud.
Okay. You know, roaming Twitter earlier this morning. Is Andre Drummond a Hall of Famer?
What is that? What is that? Why is that a question that's being asked?
Because there was because there was a graphic that's going around about centers and like their career steal rate. And it's like Hakeem. Oh. And it's Hakeem. It's another elite talent. And it's Andre Drummond.
No.
It's like, I think, second of the three.
No, all respect to that man. No, I'm just saying no right now.
Okay, fair enough. Brittany Sykes or Kelsey Mitchell?
Yikes. I don't enjoy that at all. I'm going to go Sykes.
Okay. With this year's 2K being crossplay, what build are you making in 2K, good sir?
A big that sets screens, rolls, spaces the floor, and a spot-up shooter. Hmm. 3 and D.
Okay, fair enough.
Every time I've gone in with an idea of a build, it just gives me like a role player or some superstar I was not trying to make. I was like, ooh, yeah, I'm going to make this nice two guard. And it was like, you're Jamal Murray. And I was like, all right.
If you say so. All right. Who gets dealt first? Damian Lillard or Jonathan Taylor?
Ooh, man. I'm going to go Jonathan Taylor by default.
Okay. Do you like, hey, he's good. He's good. We're not just getting rid of him because he's good. But also, we didn't pay him because we didn't win.
It doesn't seem like the best strategy when you're looking to like win the trade that you kind of created to a degree.
Yeah. Like, well, if he was that good, we would have won more games. Also, trade him. He's good.
Oh, God.
Like, I know in a literal sense those two ideas can exist, but like, also, head tilt. Last one I have for you. How many aces guards on your all W team right now?
In consideration, 3. Locked in. 1 right now. I got to revisit. Probably 2.
Mm, okay. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
It's positionless anyway. Like, you know, I'm starting to get in a headlock on some of this stuff. And I'm trying to like index like, okay, this last stretch hasn't been great, but also they're like really freaking tired. But like also some of the other guards that weren't playing well earlier in the year are really playing well right now. And so I'm not trying to do the recency bias thing. I just want to see where you were. Anyway, your free throw is good, sir.
All right. So Nebraska, their women's volleyball team, packed the house, volleyball day, 92,003 people in attendance. How impressive is that?
Very.
Does it make it more impressive that they did that because Wisconsin broke their record?
I appreciate the petty.
Oh, man. Funnier turn if a trade were to get delayed. Blazer fans falling back in love with Dame or Heat fans getting mad at their young players?
Oh, God. Oh. Steve, you don't know how much stuff I read / heard last year about the Heat roster, dog. If I see a singular negative opinion on Nikola Jovic after all of this, and he has hooped, so I don't want to take that away from him. He has hooped. I am excited about him as a long-term prospect. So like that's very much true and that's firm. But like we do all this and Jovic gets like 18 minutes and has 6 points on 3 of 9 shooting or something like that. And it turns into what happened to all y'all that wanted to keep him instead of going for Dunk? Look, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. I do not want it.
Okay. We got to ask. Who do Laker fans turn on first, Gabe Vincent or Torian Prince?
Probably Gabe.
Okay. Nikias. Do you consider yourself to be odd?
In some ways, yeah.
Okay, cool. Scoot Henderson recently trademarked for odd, overly determined to dominate. So, yeah, salute to you. I see you, big dog. It was announced the Dallas Mavericks will play a preseason game against Real Madrid in Spain. Is that game for the Intercontinental Championship?
Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve. You know what I need more than anything?
What?
I need starting power forward Gunther. I need it more than I need air.
Nah. What we need is Jokic to start acting like Gunther and wearing tracksuits and talking crazy. Will Noah Lyles be seated for that game?
Man, he better be at the whole
thing. Okay. So if Dallas beats Real Madrid and then they face Denver, and they is that game for the world championship?
Oh, goodness.
Or is this like a Thanos type deal? And we just got to keep.
We got to keep going. Because it's still not an official tournament, you see.
Oh, God. Hopefully that ends. That's got to cycle out, please. bigger offseason boost, promo wise, Villanova or Austin Reeves?
Oh, it's Austin Reeves.
Okay. Richard Sherman said the Lakers and Bucks.
Gosh darn it. Let me stop you right there. No, man. What we cooking, dog? That man been on the show for 3 days, and we already got the Lakers getting Giannis. Man, can we not? Look, man. I understand the little bit of smoke. It's fog. It ain't even smoke right now. We got some fog with Milwaukee because Giannis is extension eligible. He probably ain't going to sign it yet because it doesn't make financial sense for him to do so. The core is really good, but it's also aging. Drew over 30, Chris over 30, also coming off a really bad defensive season. He's got to get healthy, et cetera, et cetera. Picks are out the door, so it's going to be tough to kind of reboot. I understand where the writing is on the wall. Naturally, the Lakers would be interested in Giannis, as with the other 29 teams in the NBA, because Giannis is, at worst, a top three player in basketball still in his prime. However, if we got to the point to where Giannis is not re-signing and that man's going to get traded, Milwaukee would not want to trade for Anthony Davis, who very quietly, it's not like he's 25. They are not going to trade for Anthony Davis so they could be a 45-win team, especially in light of their pick situation. What the Milwaukee Bucks would likely want is a collection of very young talent that they can build upon, and they can clear their books from there. We are not about to do an Anthony Davis-Giannis swap. This is not 2K. Why are we here?
All right, folks, I don't know if you can hear it, but I just unlocked the achievement. So the hashtag is Big Mad. There we go. Salute. One's up for me. Let's see. I'm almost done, man. Did Alyssa Thomas deliver the best first pitch of all time?
High as the keys. It was pretty good.
And also, Paul right. Westhead or Larry Bird?
Dog, listen. Winning time has been cooking this entire season, dawg. I actively dislike Paul's Westhead. That man, what is that man cooking? If I hear the system one more time, that man told Magic, hey, I will put you on the bench. And Magic said, are you done? And I was like, yep. This is cooked. It is almost Riley season, buddy. Speaking of Riley, very brief aside, off the cuff. Yesterday, no W games. We had the super early watch party at ungodly hours to watch USA Jordan. And so I just kind of had Wednesdays. Like, all right, cool. I went and saw Talk to Me in theaters. Buddy, that movie had me and continues to have me in a headlock. That is one of the best horror films I have ever seen. If you have not seen that movie, go watch it. It is tremendous content.
Also, is that the one where they're at the table and they got the spooky hand?
Yes.
Call me Jalen Rose. Not gonna be able to do it.
Fair enough. But the thought was sparked because you mentioned Riley. There's a young character named Riley. There's a very particular scene with him. That is it's a horror movie. But that, it's so good. It's good stuff. Anyway, did you have more free throws?
Last one, a birthday cake that is the opposite of what you asked for or the middle seat.
Oh, Oh my goodness. Like, it's the cake. Also, can we just not be obtuse about this entire situation? Don't tell me without me request. Steve, if I was like, man, I would really love a pizza for my birthday. And then you come with the wrong pizza. It's like, all right, well, it's the thought that counts. I appreciate it. I just said I wanted pizza. If you tell me, hey, man, what you want? And then I tell you what I want. And then you get me something different. I'm going to be upset. And I have a right to be upset. And I have a right to express that I'm upset. That doesn't make me a baby or a man child for being upset that my very specific request was not followed on. Why are we making this difficult? Why am I so ramped up right now? It's afternoon. I need to go get this pizza.
I turned the guys into the Buster podcast.
But I'm saying though. Oh, God. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. Actually, let me pause the outro real quick. To everyone listening, gift giving is so easy. Learn the person that you're trying to give, your family, your friends, romantic partnerships, sneaky links, whatever the case may be. Learn your person and get them things. Or, foolproof plan, ask them what they want. Ask for a list of options, and then you can pick one. Could not be easier. Could not be easier. Anyway, we're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community where we're having fun discussions not related to cake. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties where we're watching FIBA World Cup hoops. We're watching some W hoops as we hit the stretch run for the playoff push. We're watching wrestling, which... we got a filler show on Friday, huh? Because we got, what is it, Payback on Saturday?
Nah, John Cena coming back, bud.
Oh, John Cena is back. Ah, so that's how they do the thing. Okay, bet. Well, we're probably going to tap in with John Cena tomorrow. So, anyway, the link to the room should be in your podcast description. It should be hyperlinked. If it is, just click on that link, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free with no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Oh, Nikias, excellent job. Great job. They were out of the Eagles title belt, so I sent you a Cowboys one. Is that cool?